if you're a regular listener, you know that we love checking in with crime writers of Canada and mystery and crime writers all across the country, mainly because while I'm a big reader and I read everything, well, let's face it, probably 70% of what I read is all in the mystery, crime, thriller, cozy. I'll name every variety. Cassandra, yeah. You name one.
Cozy.
Okay, it's the last one I said. You know what? I'm going to talk to your improv coach because I'm not sure what's happening there.
Is that what's happening?
I know, I put you on the spot and that was mean.
Don't do that.
But listen, joining us now, she has written numerous short stories that have been published in various mystery publications. But now she has her debut novel coming out in the spring. And she's also an award-winning journalist.
Hello.
Joining Cassandra and I now, please welcome to the show Donna Lee Moulton. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for inviting me.
Well, let's start with a little bit of background on you and how, I mean, you have been a writer for a long time, but I would imagine that writing for news publications versus fiction is kind of a different thing. When did you know you wanted writing to be your career? And then how did you kind of transition from journalism to fiction?
My mother used to say that when I was in about grade 3, we had an assignment where we had to write a sentence. And every other kid in the class wrote a 4-word sentence or a 5-word sentence, and I wrote 6 paragraphs. So she could, yeah.
That's a run-on.
Yeah, she contends that the writing was literally on the wall from an early age. One of the things we always talk about in the writing community is the ability to survive as a writer. Mm-hmm. And, of course, journalism allows you to do that. When I was in university, I wrote for the university newspaper, which was a wonderful launching ground. Gives you a profile, gives you credibility, and it gives you some experience. So that was my path for the longest time. But somewhere in the back of my mind were all of these other equally and different creative endeavors that resulted in a variety of different publications.
Well, and you bring up a really good point in that we have talked about this on the show before, but I think it's important to remind people because a lot of the times, especially if you really enjoy mystery, you know, there's a lot of really big name writers who, yeah, have made a lot of money. Look at probably the most obvious example would be James Patterson, who is a book churning machine and, you know, has 8 shelves at the bookstore. And but that is a very small number of writers and people who write books in this world. For most people, even if they've got a couple of really well-known books, it's not generally fiction writing is not generally a lucrative career, and so you really have to love it.
I think that's very true. I think that for writers, there is a direction that often pulls them, and that may be the direction that they find themselves going in most often. But many of us are also pulled into side branches and side roads. So I will do some poetry, or I will do a short story, as do many others. And so I think that equally fills some sort of need as a writer, but it is minus the expectation that this is a career or a profitable endeavor. That's gravy if and when it happens.
Well, and so when you were first writing as a journalist, did you know eventually when you started writing mystery was what you wanted to do? Or was it, I would imagine as a journalist, you frequently come up with stories that have some sort of perhaps criminal element or suspect, and you have to do your own kind of investigating, even if it's, well, no matter what the subject is, you kind of have to investigate your subject. So did you always want to do mystery, or did it come, was it inspired by your work as a journalist?
It's interesting because I was a freelance journalist. So if I didn't sell an idea, I didn't get paid. You know, if I was off 2 weeks with the flu, I didn't get paid. So we as freelance journalists did everything from the latest truck tires on the market for 2023 right through to the best variety of champagne. But within that context, you find yourself in worlds that you would not normally be in. So I wrote a lot about money laundering, not a topic that would normally fall within my realm, except I was writing for an accounting magazine, and that's big news in the accounting world. So I think you're right. It teaches you to have a great deal of comfort in areas that aren't second nature to you. The other thing I think that journalism does, which is great for fiction, is that it helps you with dialogue, because you have to pick out the best quotes. You have to try to draw quotes out of individuals. You have to understand how to tell their story very shortly and succinctly. And journalism lets you do that.
That is, first of all, you said several things that are very interesting in there. Number one, I always forget that every industry has its own magazines, and which is its own fascinating subculture. But then it didn't occur to me that, like, yeah, I bet those money laundering articles for accounting magazines were the most read articles, because I feel like some of the other articles might be a bit dry.
Absolutely. And not only that, as a journalist, people are willing to talk to you because you're writing for a publication that has credibility. The quote will be attributed. They have some faith in the accuracy of the information. But doors open that wouldn't otherwise open if you were a fiction writer calling up one of the big four accounting firms and saying, I'd really like someone to talk to me about money laundering.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes. That would be a much harder sell. And then, yes, that's, it makes so much sense, too, that what you said about helping dialogue. And that is something that has never occurred to me. But you're right, because you would know when you have to be factual and use the person's exact words, and what's jumping out at me, what's moving the story forward. And of course that translates to fiction. That makes so much sense.
It's very helpful. And what isn't as helpful is that journalism is telling a story in a very limited number of words. In fact, when you get an assignment, you are given a deadline and you are given a word count. And the word count is fairly rigorous. So as a journalist, you get quite used to compacting the story. And what I found with fiction is that for journalism, you go from A to B to C. In fiction, you go from A to A1. Maybe you meander down to B2. You come back to C. And it's like there's this whole other world that's more nuanced, that can be more descriptive, that can take its time to get to the place it wants to go. Whereas in journalism, we say, oh, my God, no, cut out those six paragraphs. In fiction, we want those six paragraphs left in.
Of course. Of course. All right. We get to now, you are writing all kinds of things as a journalist. You start writing short stories. Was the novel something, like, were you working on novels that whole time? Did you focus on shorter things? Or at what point were you like, I got a whole book here, I'm ready?
You know, it was one of the things that you always say you're going to do this. Oh, I really want to do this. I really want to travel to this place. I really want to go to this event. For me, it was, I always wanted to write a mystery. But life intervenes, and all of a sudden you realize, you know, a lot of life has intervened. If I'm going to do this, I better do it now. So it was a conscious decision with some thought put into it, and then the writing began. And that, I must admit, is one of the things that journalism really does help with, is it gives you the discipline of writing. You write to deadline. You write a word count to deadline. So it was easy for me to say, I will write 1,000 words a day and 90% of the time be able to live up to that.
Yeah, I mean, that's discipline, which is not my strong suit.
It's also my background, though. You know, if a editor said they needed a story by Monday at 9, you knew that there was a hole in their publication if your story wasn't in by Monday at 9. Mm. And if you wanted to get rehired, you better meet your deadline. So it's becomes very normal and natural.
John Lee, my next question is really largely just for me. So listeners, bear with me. But you, your short story, Swan Song, is in the book Cold Canadian Crime. I was one of the judges, I don't like that word, but going through the initial submissions. Give me a brief synopsis of Swan Song.
And Swan Song, because it's in Cold Canadian Crime, there was a limit to the number of words we could write, but there was also a theme, and that theme was cold. Mm. And we were given the broadest definition of cold. It could be a cold case. It could be a relationship that had cooled. I took the straight and narrow path. If you're talking cold, let's talk cold temperatures. Mm-hmm. So I set my story in Iqaluit, obviously cold. And yes. I had been to Iqaluit on many, many occasions, so I felt comfortable in that particular environment, especially for a short story where I wouldn't be delving into any of the social injustice issues. So my story is premised on a fictional police station for the first time. They will be policing their own community in Iqaluit, and this is the first major crime that comes their way.
Okay, thank you. I read a lot of stories, and so I was having trouble pinpointing it, but yes, I remember the story very well. And it was at the hotel, right?
And, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, yes. Great story.
Thank you.
And that's why I say the question was just for me, is that I'm like, oh, I know it's on the tip of my brain which story was hers. And I needed that nudge. And now the listeners know you can pick up Cold Canadian Crime, and now you will know which story. Well, actually, you'll know because it says in the book. I'm not a detective. Let's get into Hung Out to Die, because this is your debut full-length book and a bit of a different type of character that we're following in this one.
And I think for me, a bit of a different character. If you had asked me, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 15 years ago, who is your main character likely to be? I would have initially said woman. Without a doubt, my main character would be female. Mm. And my main character would be savvy and feminist and all of those things. And instead, I have a quintessentially male main character whose number one personality trait is that he's a psychopath, but not in the mass-killing Hannibal Lecter kind of psychopath. The day-to-day, I can survive this and meld with the rest of the population, psychopaths.
Mm-hmm. Which are actually surprising in number, but because they don't go on murdering sprees, we don't notice a society a lot. But I think that's very interesting, and because it's also, it must be a fun character to write, because you can still kind of make them likable, but also basically colder in their thought process and the way they kind of execute their life.
And it's a flip side of the same coin. You're absolutely right that you can put him into situations. For example, one of the scenes involves going to the home of the family who has just lost their husband, father, brother. And it's quite clear from his perspective that all of this hugging and connecting and bringing food means absolutely nothing. And so you understand that he is different. At the same time, you understand how careful he has to be not to let the rest of the world know that he's different. So he's very observant. He's very detailed, because that's a survival mechanism.
I love it. I love it. It is so, so interesting. And so give us an idea of the plot we're going to run into in Hung Out to Die.
So this is, and interestingly, this is something in retrospect I'm not sure I would have done, but my main character, Riel Brava, is CEO of the Canadian Cannabis Corp, based here in Elmsdale, Nova Scotia. And he shows up for work one day to discover that the security system has been disarmed, something that cannot happen under regulations of cannabis in this country. He dashes in to discover that his controller is hanging from a rope in his office. The initial thought is suicide. Of course, we know it's not going to be suicide. And so all of a sudden, Riel is thrown into this world where he has to help catch a murderer. He has to accept the fact that there has been a murder. He does that with the help of his wife, Tiffany, and with the help of a detective, Lynn Raines. So it's about their friendship, how that evolved. It's also about a number of clues that led us to understand why someone would want to kill this seemingly innocuous individual, and what happens when they confront that killer.
I'm so excited to read it. I love this. I love this idea, and I'm very interested to get to know Riel Bravo a little bit better.
Look, I welcome you. That's, I do think, you know, thank you for that. The premise one tries to make interesting. One of the things that happens as you write is that the book becomes something you didn't expect it to become. So there are characters in there that took on a life of their own. Mm. There are also situations in there that took on a life of their own. One of the small little asides, I think for me, the book is unexpectedly funny. And at a point throughout this book, a word kept popping up. And it was a made-up word. And I had been struggling with a title, and I thought, that's the title of the book. And then you think, this will be a series. So the unexpected word that kept popping up was, and you will love this, chunderfuck. And I thought, fabulous, because then the next book will be numbnuts, and the next book will be dickwad.
Oh, my
goodness.
And
the next book will, I know. But as I was sending the book, I realized that word may make the book seem darker, grittier, edgier than the book really is.
It didn't work.
So I used a working title with the full intent of always coming back to Chunderfuck. And when I got my publisher and my publisher said, yes, let's do this, I said, I'd really like to name the book this. She had no objection to the potential profanity because I was using little asterisks for two of the letters in the last syllable. But do you know why we couldn't title the book that?
Why?
Social media doesn't pick up asterisks.
Interesting. That is, I didn't think about that, but there is, it's also program things in a computer, and I'm sure there are some things you have to do computer-wise when books are coming out. Computers also often don't like it when they're in titles because symbols are used in code as well. But I never thought about it for social media, and that is very funny.
The things you don't anticipate that have nothing to do with the quality of the work or the connection to the book, but for reasons, you know, totally removed, it ended up being called Hung Out to Die.
Well, for everyone like me who is listening and is saying, I cannot wait to read this book, where is the best place for them to find it, for them to stay tuned until it is out, and to find out more about you?
Look, my website is a one-stop shop, donnellymoulton.com. You can buy the books. You can learn a little bit more about me. You can read some excerpts and some other things that I've written, and I'd love to hear from people.
And that's Donnellee Moulton, Moulton. And the forthcoming book is Hung Out to Die. Donnellee, thank you so much for joining us today.
Look, thank you for having me.
And as always, you can also see new releases at crimewriterscanada.com.